Oh, cut out. You're frozen.
The videos. Ah, okay. Okay, okay.
All right, hold on. Let's see if we can
get
Can you hear me? Let's see. The signal is getting stronger.
Yeah, you're coming through clear right now.
Cool. Okay, let's do it in this room.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks for jumping on, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm trying to find a nice background here. How's that?
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Cool.
So just for those listening, hey, thanks so much for joining the Austin Meyer podcast. And for those watching the new video feature coming out to social media, thanks for joining. On this show, I interview some of the world's best storytellers in all genres about how they craft the stories they tell. These are a new experiment, which I'm calling Snapshots. Quick episodes, hearing from people out in the field about the work that they're doing. And it's going to evolve like everything I do as we see fit and as it fits into this ecosystem of bringing value to people who are telling stories in all sorts of genres. And I posted a little call on my Instagram story yesterday looking for freelancers who have been impacted by coronavirus. And it's a tough time for so many people out there. And I know it's hitting a lot of journalists, photographers, filmmakers, all people in this freelance world of storytelling particularly hard. And so I just wanted to jam with some people and hear how they're dealing with it, what they're doing to stay creative. Are they doing assignments? So I'm excited to have Henry on the show with me today. Henry, can you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
My name is Henry Millay. I'm reporting to you here from Paraguay. Aregua, Paraguay. It's a small town in the interior of the country. And I guess to give a little bit of background, several weeks ago, I ended a 6-month canoe expedition down the Paraguay River with my project partner, Jeff Wong. And it just so happened that the day that we got off the river, the Paraguayan government was rolling out their social isolation policy, the quarantine. And they started to reduce the flights coming in and out of the country. Now the border is entirely shut down. And so here we are in Paraguay. We're sort of in the middle of the project that included the expedition. And so I wanted to come on here and talk about our experience being here in the country still during the coronavirus and how that's impacted our work and kind of where we're hoping to go from here.
Yeah. So you guys were doing photography, video, or what were you producing on this trip down the river?
Yeah.
What was your goal with the project?
The project is called Rostros del Rio, which means Faces of the River. It's a project that explores the biocultural diversity found along one of South America's greatest waterways. And the project was actually born out of our experience as Peace Corps volunteers here in Paraguay. Jeff and I have been living in Paraguay for the past 3 years. We finished our Peace Corps service in April. And while we were serving as Peace Corps volunteers, we had this crazy idea to row down the Paraguay River in a traditional fisherman wooden rowboat. Jeff served as a volunteer in the village, the furthest southern village in the country called Paso de Patria. It's a small town on the river. And as we were going through our experience, we always would bounce ideas off one another. And he kept mentioning to me how closely connected his community was to the river and what impacts the river had all throughout the community, not just health, but also economically. A lot of the culture itself had to do with the river. Many of the inhabitants are fishermen. One story he told me, I remember, is he was working closely with a nurse in the health post, and she told him every time the river floods, the water quality goes so, it just goes completely south and everyone gets sick. And that story sort of struck a chord with me because during that time, farther north in Asunción, the city's capital, we were seeing some of the worst flooding in recent history. Mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of people were displaced from their homes. And we began to sort of think collectively, Jeff and I wonder what sorts of stories one might find along this river that have to do with connection to the environment and perhaps climate change. And what what makes those stories both unique but also similar. And perhaps we might be able to learn more collectively about what this river means to Paraguay as a whole if we can kind of piece those stories together. So that's how the project began. Mm-hmm. So in October, we got into a little wooden rowboat up in the northern Pantanal, which is where the headwaters of the river are.
And how do you spend much time in rowboats or like...
So I have like that experience. Before? That's a funny story. So I called Jeff. So this idea began. It was like a rainy day, and I had nothing to do. And I was on Google Earth. And I was like looking at the river, and I was like, I wonder if this is even possible.
I love.
So
that.
The first thing was like, that's how I first learned this is the world, the continent's largest free flowing waterway. So there's no dam. So it is physically possible. We learned to put a boat in the water in the very beginning and reach the end in Paso de Patria. So I called Jeff, knowing that the guy is from Boston. He's a total city guy. He had never camped in his entire life before.
Wow.
So I called him and I was like, Jeff, like, do you want to row this thing with me? And he was like, without hesitation, he was like, yeah, let's do it. So it was a hilarious experience kind of walking him through like what that would actually look like. We went on a test run in our boat like a year and a half ago, and it was his first time ever camping. And he was like, okay, this is going to be the reality for 6 months.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we got in the boat in October and we made our way down. And like you said, we were carrying out photography, but also a lot of interviewing. We were doing research for a conservation organization in the form of collecting testimonial data on climate change adaptation. And also we were recording the whole experience with the camera on video as well.
Wow. And so what form are those pieces going to take or come to the world? And have you figured that out yet?
We're starting to piece that together now. So we have to submit a lot of our deliverables to the conservation organization, which it's going to be photography and then the data from the research. Mm-hmm. And then we've also been thinking about the follow-up work that we want to be doing here in Paraguay. So the expedition is ended, but really the work has just begun. So I'm kind of working at this intersection right now between development and storytelling. And right now we actually have our sights more set on the development side of things. Mm-hmm. We want to revisit a lot of the communities that we stayed in, and using the data we collected in the interviews, carry out kind of pilot programs on climate change adaptation. Very localized and specific to the issues. Cause like I mentioned, it was really incredible to hear like a climate change conversation with somebody in the south of the country. You hear issues that are just completely unrelated, but in a way also very related to the issues that you hear in the north of the country.
Right.
So those projects that we'll be implementing are going to be very localized and very specific to those local issues.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be looking for kind of funding for those follow-up projects. Mm-hmm. And then in the long run, we're hoping to, using the footage from the expedition and then also capturing footage of these projects being carried out by local counterparts, sort of tell the story of how the projects were carried out and how they came to be through the lens of an incredible adventure down this river.
Yeah. Amazing, man. I can't wait to see some of that.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So before we get to kind of how the latest world events have kind of impacted your project and how you're going about, you know, hitting those deliverables, I'm curious what on your trip from a storytelling perspective, what was like one of the biggest learnings for you? Or one of the biggest challenges, kind of anything in there that, you know, you're really taking away from this massive undertaking that you guys went on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the biggest kind of learning moments for me personally as a storyteller, and just as like an adventurer or an explorer, whatever you want to call it. We went into this thing, very confident. We were thinking that we're going to make it down this river. We had our itinerary, where we were going to get to. And we felt very well prepared for the expedition. And very quickly we realized it was not going to be possible without the help and the support and the advice of the local people that we met along the way. And something that's kind of funny is that we were carrying out all of these interviews about climate change and about how the weather impacted the daily lives of these people. And not once during the preparation of the project did we think, I wonder how the weather is going to impact us as people. And it ended up being kind of like the central story of our expedition. Our entire strategy pivoted about halfway through because the heat was just, we were entering the Paraguayan summer. It became unbearable. I got heat illness and we started rowing through the night, and we were shifting at the same time from the dry season to the wet season. And so it became very apparent that we were just as the people who we were meeting along the way in these communities, who are so physically and intrinsically connected to the weather and the environment and everything that surrounds them, we too were putting ourselves in that same position.
I hear you. I think that's been a challenge for me in the past too, and especially working as kind of like a one man, a two man, two person team. There's so much that you have to take into account to make something like this happen, right? Not only like the logistics of making it down a river, or if it's a story that's happening in your hometown, the logistics of finding the people that you're going to work with, or the people you're going to film or photograph, and figuring out when you're going to meet up and all the logistics of that. But then also, I think we're storytellers. We want to go to story. We want to think about the story. And so sometimes those little details, or the details that we perceive as little, can be easily kind of pushed to the side or just forgot about. And then those are often the things that throw the biggest wrench into the project.
Another thing I found was that when you're dealing with sort of like a multidisciplinary project, we're doing research, but we're also doing storytelling. And then we're also just logistically, physically trying to get ourselves from point A to point B. The priorities shift a lot over time. And sometimes the photography or the documentation or the storytelling doesn't come first, you know? And so a lot of times I'm thinking back on the expedition, a lot of the craziest things that happened, or, you know, the stories that I end up telling people about when they ask, like, so what was it like? I didn't even have the camera rolling because I was just worrying about we need to make sure we're safe here, or, you know, we need to make sure we're crossing all our T's. So
yeah,
that's another thing I learned as well.
Right on, man. So take me to this point we're in now with coronavirus. And when you said you got off the river, and pretty shortly after, like, your expedition is finished, you kind of come up for air at the end of this journey, and then suddenly this hits. So what goes through your mind, and what happens then?
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew it was pretty serious because on the very last night of the expedition, we were camping out just north of the final site, and we were hanging out with these fishermen who were going night fishing. So they were out in their canoe in the middle of the night with their headlamps, looking for catfish and stuff. And I went out with them in their boat, and I heard them like talking about wow, I can't believe the Fiesta Patronal, which is like the once per year sort of festivity celebrating the patron saint of the town, was going to be canceled this year. And like, wow, I can't believe it's going to be canceled. This has never happened before. And I asked them, I was like, wait, it's really getting canceled? And they were like, yeah, haven't you heard? And that's when I knew, because I've spent enough time in Paraguay to know when something like this reaches the interior of the country. So half of the population lives in Asunción, the other half lives in the interior. When something like this reaches the interior, you know it has really penetrated the society and everything. So that was the night before I got off the river. Then when we got off the river the next day, we were going to do an activity with the school that day that was canceled. So everything was already shutting down within Paraguay. So we were just thinking, okay, we're in this town, like 8 hours south of the capital. Like, are we even going to be able to make it to Asunción? So that was kind of priority number one, was just getting back to our home base. And then we started thinking about, Jeff and I started thinking about what our next steps were going to be. And it was a really hard process for me. Because like I said, the expedition ended, but we still have so much work we want to do here. And I had to make a decision as to whether or not my plan was to go home and visit my
family.
Where
is home for you?
I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
I've been home once in the past 3 years, and I was really looking forward to seeing my family. Tomorrow is my mom and my sister's birthday. And it was like this decision. I knew that if I were to go home, there was going to be a really high chance that I would be stuck at home, right? And I wouldn't be able to fly back to Paraguay to continue working. And Jeff, my project partner, was going through the same thing. And we ultimately decided to kind of bunker down here and stick with it to carry out the work to our best ability, hoping that as many as all of us are, that this will soon pass and we'll be able to go home and see our families. So that was sort of the decision that was made over the past couple of weeks, and that's where I'm at right now.
So is most of the post-production work that you have on this project, can you do that remotely? Because I know for some freelancers who I've spoken to, like, some of it was just like either bad timing or good timing. Like, there's some people who just finished up a project and they're going into like intense post-production editing zone for a while, and they can do that from home. Whereas some people is like, I'm just about to go into the field and then this hit. How did that factor in for you?
As far as post-production and editing, I suppose you could say that we're in a good spot for that. I was planning on bunkering. I'm in the middle of editing tens of thousands of photos right now, which is, you know, something that's probably easier to do when you're in social isolation. So in that sense, I suppose we're sort of in a good place. But we're hoping to be able to connect with people back stateside as far as pitching this story and kind of moving forward, like, logistically and financially. And I think I'm hopeful that we'll be able to continue to do that stuff remotely. Zoom works pretty well. So we'll see how that goes. And then as far as like, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but yeah, so it's sort of, I guess it's a little bit of both.
And how are you feeling about pitching the story and trying to place it in publications? Are you feeling, is this a new experience for you? Do you have a lot of experience? Are you confident in your ability to do that? What are your thoughts on that?
So I have more of a background in development work, and we've decided to sort of first pitch this as a development project. And that is priority number A, is let's get this financing so we can carry out these pilot programs in these communities. And then we're sort of pinning the storytelling onto that. So we think it's a really valuable community development project that we'll be carrying out in these communities. And then we also think that the storytelling value through sharing those stories is also incredibly valuable to the organization as well. Mm-hmm. So that's our kind of strategy. As far as experience goes, I'm a total noob here.
Nice.
And it's really exciting. I'm kind of making it up as I go, and it's an incredible learning opportunity. Jeff and I both jumped into this whole storytelling thing relatively recently compared to a lot of the people you have on your show, which I love listening to, by the way.
Thank you.
So recently, something that I've been doing with my free time in quarantine has been reaching out to like storytellers who I really respect their work, and I like appreciate any advice that they would have for me. And what I found is that, number one, I think social media is an incredible tool. Instagram, like, that's how you and I met. That's how this call came to be.
Yep.
And like, it has been an amazing way to reach out to people who like, I wouldn't have thought they would have even responded to me. And it's led to like amazing conversations. People who like, and maybe it has to do with the fact that everyone is in isolation right now. Maybe people have more time on their plates, but like, that's a really great way of taking advantage of that time, right? Is just reach out to people. And like, it's really positive and uplifting to see like people take an hour, 2 hours out of a day to speak to me, you know, and to give me their advice and their two cents on like their experience.
So during this time, you've been thinking about like, who's a photographer, a journalist, storyteller that I admire. You've just been like DMing them on Instagram and then saying like, hey, do you have time to talk on the phone, or what, like specifically, what have you been doing? That's what you've been doing.
Exactly what I do. It's like people who I really respect, I follow their work and I tell them that. I'm just like, hey, listen, like, I explain to them a little bit about who I am. And then I say like, if you have any time, I would love to jump on a call. And it has actually ended up leading to some really cool encounters, I guess you want to say. And I've learned a lot from that. So
that's awesome. Have you asked any of those people about strategies that you might want to use during this time as you're formulating pitches to get these pieces placed somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I like to ask people kind of very specific questions, and then also general, just kind of advice oriented questions. So yeah, I've asked, I recently was on a call with Jason Houston. He's a guy who's been working in conservation photography for decades.
Okay.
I really love his work. You should check him out if you haven't seen his stuff. And I was telling him all about our project, because he works mainly for NGOs working in conservation in like the tropics.
Okay.
So very similar kind of line of work. And he gave me some incredible advice and really useful stuff. So
are you gonna give us one little nugget here? What's going on?
So I guess the one thing we talked about a lot is I was explaining to him about our project, about the expedition and how this is sort of one of my first professional experiences in storytelling. And then like, what can I do like looking forward? I assume that, aside from the follow-up work that I'll be doing for Faces of the River, like there won't be much work just like landing on my doorstep. Like, how do I go out and actually get that stuff? And then that led to a conversation in like, with what's going on in the world right now, like it's even harder to go out and create stuff and to like get work. And I think a lot of storytellers are kind of like on hold right now, you know, and it's like, how can we like stay productive and stay creative? And he gave me a piece of advice that I think is, it works really well, especially for the situation that we're all in right now. He said, when you're early on in your career, like a lot of people say like, oh my gosh, like I don't have all these opportunities to tell stories. Like, I feel like I don't have enough work. But he said, you can view that as an incredible opportunity to go out and create, so in my case, photography, without like having any deliverables, without even having potentially a story to tell yet, right? Just go out and create anything that interests you, anything that you know, motivates you, that makes you like stoked, right? And just go out and make that stuff, because later down the line, you won't have that opportunity. You'll be working with editors, or you'll be working in collaboration with other institutions, other organizations, marketing agencies. And when you have the latitude to be able to kind of take your whether it's like your visual aesthetic or your personal storytelling angle at something, because you are the only person involved in it, it can lead to your best work and your best creativity. So I'm going to take that. I mean, and that's what I see a lot of people doing. Like I see that you're doing the 10 photos a day.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I just like create 10 good photos today?
Or 10 bad photos. Just make sure that every day I'm like, at least have my camera in my hand and I'm practicing the craft, right?
Yeah, because that's really how like your style will develop. Because mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel, Austin, but it's like I feel when if I'm working in collaboration with an organization who I like admire, maybe I feel a little bit more reserved to like place my personal like aesthetic on the photography, yeah. right? And maybe it will become like more of an objective, too objective, right? But when you have all of the creative control, that's really when like the growth happens, I guess. And when you're not afraid to lose, you're not afraid to like make mistakes, which I think that's why this whole 10 photo challenge that you're doing is so cool. Yeah. It's like you are like embracing the, like it's like what do I like about this photo, and then like what do I hate about this photo, and everything right. in between.
Right.
So I might start doing that as well.
Yeah, man. Awesome. Join up.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, let's wrap this up with telling people where they can find you and find your work and follow and support.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the project that we're working on is called Rostros del Rio, RostrosDelRio. You can find that on Instagram. It's largely sort of positioned and made for a Spanish-speaking Paraguayan audience, but all the videos and photography have English captions as well. So you can check out our work there for the project. And then I post my own photos on my Instagram page, which is called Henry Photo.
There we go. I encourage everyone to go check him out, show him some love as he's at the beginning of his journey. And yeah. Henry, thanks so much for jumping on the first episode of I'm not
snapshots.
Sure. Snapshots, yes. I appreciate it, man.
Right on. Have a good one and be safe, everyone, and peace.
All right. I'll talk to you later.